From the iHotel on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the seventh day of February 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will update us on conditions in Argentina and Brazil, and maybe even take some time to take a look at the weather forecast for the winter wheat growing regions of the United States. And as we move through the program, we'll hear from Dennis Bowman. We're here at the iHotel today at the Crop Management Conference, where retailers and farmers are earning CEUs, or continuing education units. He'll tell us about that and why it happens, and preview the Crop Management Conference, which will take place on the 21st day of February in Malta, the northern part of Illinois, in DeKalb, and how you can get yourself registered for that event today. And we'll do it all right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the Crop Management Conference at the iHotel today. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's with Stuart Peterson. Hey, good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start, as we have for the past several weeks, with some of the key support and resistance areas. These seem to be getting more important as we actually have added a little volatility into the marketplace.
Well, and we've seen more volatility in the corn market. It seems like the moves in beans can be big, but when something moves in corn, it's almost like a miracle right now. And so March corn resistance moved up to 369.25. That was the high that we had back in October of 2017. And above that, we have 375, which is the 200-day moving average. Now, support, basically near-term support, is 357. Long-term support, major, 345.5. So, you know, it's about a 20 cent down and 15 cent up level, possibly. When you look at March beans, resistance at 10.04¾. That actually was a high from last week, from the 30th. We need to close above 995.5, which is the 62.5% retracement of the move down from 1027 to 944.5. Long-term support sits there at 200-day moving average right now, which is 988. So that has moved up some. Last week we were at 980. You know, so there's a lot going on. But, you know, we have a report out tomorrow. We've got the USDA report coming out, and we've got the dollar moving around. So all of that has an impact on the market.
Well, let's talk about the dollar just a bit. The president says he'd like the dollar to go higher. We've been talking about inflation. That had an impact on the Dow Jones Industrial Averages earlier in the week. And yet we have the dollar still down in near record lows, at least for the current move.
Well, that's true. You know, today we've had a move up. You know, in January we put in a high of 103.8. And so today we moved above the 20-day moving average. We're trying. I mean, you know, it's trying really hard. We're seeing some buy signals come in on the market. Support there is at 200-month moving average, which is at 88.28. I always have to make sure I emphasize month. And, you know, the last time we saw that was in DESA 14. I think that this has actually been a gift to our producers, because the drop in the dollar has made our exports a little more attractive, and it's coming at a time when the South American farmers are having lots of issues and not getting their stuff to the market as quickly as they'd like to. So I think there's a lot of good things going on for us here.
Hey, you mentioned the USDA report. That's due out at 11 o'clock tomorrow. World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, or WASDE figures. Can you give us a quick preview?
I can. The average change on the day of the report right now in the last 15 years has been corn up 7 or down 3 and beans up 8 or down 10. Well, you know, what does that look like? I mean, that's really not big moves on either side. When we look at the stocks number, they're talking about maybe 10 million less in stocks for corn, 2.47. We have to remember that's still 170 million more than we had in last year. Soybeans, 492, that would be a 22 million increase over last month's report, and 190 million increase over last year at this time. And when we look at wheat, 993, just a tiny little 4 million increase, basically. You know, world stocks were looking at the core number actually dropping to 204 from 206 on January's report, and that is 24 million metric tons less than we had last year at this time. So the core number in the world has dropped compared to here in the U.S. Soybeans at 98.6, exactly where the USDA had them last year, or last month, but now when we look at last year, that's about 2 million metric tons higher. Wheat, 267.8, slightly lower than last month, but about 15 million metric tons higher than a year ago. Now, if you look at Brazil and Argentine production together, okay, for corn and beans, it's for corn, it's 93.5 million metric tons. That's compared to 95 for that the USDA had basically last month and 98.5 a year ago. On beans, 111.4 million metric tons. Last month, the USDA had 110, and I think all of us are expecting that they're going to raise that. Last year, they had 114.1 million metric tons. So at the world level, you know, corn is a little tighter. Beans are not, and wheat is about the same. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting as we move forward. I'm anxious to see tomorrow's report.
And speaking of which, it will, as you suggested, give us some numbers for Brazil and Argentina. What do we know from your digging about crop conditions there?
Well, I tell you what, it's been tough in Brazil. They've just had so much rain. I found some interesting information, and I got some from Dr. Cordonier. He said the rains in Mato Grosso, you know, just been wreaking havoc with truck traffic on BR-163. Anybody who knows much about Brazil knows that BR-163 is the major road that heads up to the Northern Arc, and where all the, you know, where Cargill and everybody else is up on the Amazon River. So as of Monday, they figured there were about 3,000 trucks stuck in a 30 to 40 mile stretch. Can you imagine 3,000 trucks? Truckers are protesting. They're burning tires, which I think is kind of ironic, and blocking the highway because some of them are stuck with no water, food, or sanitary services. This is what happened to them last year. And so BR-163 goes north to the ports on the Amazon. It goes through the state of Pará. And there's about a 112-mile section that's unpaved in Pará, and that's basically where the problems are, you know, and the problems were last year. In fact, last year, some of those trucks were stuck there for as long as 2 weeks. Can you imagine that? At least this year, they've got the Federal Highway Police and the Brazilian Army posted along the road in some places to offer help. But their help at times have just been to close the road. You know, so they're really having a difficult time getting out in Mato Grosso, at least, getting their product to where it has to go. So that's helping us, you know, because it's not moving as quickly as it should. They are predicting more rain down there, and so we'll have to see what happens.
Okay, you said you talked to Dr. Cordonier. Did he have any insight about Argentina?
Yeah, he certainly does, and it's funny. We definitely agree on this, he and I, because I think we talked about it last week about being careful about getting too excited on dry weather in Argentina. He says be very careful when being concerned about the dryness in Argentina. Their soil holds water better than the Corn Belt soils do, and their subsoil moisture is very near the top, so it can sustain crops as well, if not better, than the Corn Belt in the U.S. So all of this excitement that we've been seeing because of the dryness in Argentina, you got to be very careful and take advantage of the opportunities when they come.
I see by your notes that you also found a little information. We don't talk about Paraguay a lot. We do mention it from time to time. But it is, what, the third largest soybean producer in South America?
It is, you know, behind Brazil and Argentina. One of the reasons it poked out at me was because their truckers are on strike right now and it's harvest down there. The truckers are really unhappy. They just signed an agreement between Paraguay and Mato Grosso do Sul that the Brazilian double-bottom trucks can bring beans from Mato Grosso do Sul through Paraguay to the port of Concepcion. And that gives them the ability to send it down the Paraguay River and then have it barged to the Paraná River and export it out of Argentina. And so, you know, the truckers are really worried that basically they're going to underbid them, you know, and things like that, that they're going to come in and try and solicit, you know, solicit business. And the Paraguay truckers did solicit business out of Mato Grosso do Sul, too. So they're unhappy. The producers, on the other hand, really like it. because it gives them another export market, you know, to sell to. And when you looked at, I thought it was very interesting with Paraguay, when you looked at them 25 years ago, Paraguay raised 2 million tons of beans, corn, wheat, rice, and sunflowers combined. Today, that number is 17 million. So, you know, they definitely need export routes. There's absolutely no question about it.
Any final notes before I let you go for the day?
Well, I found two kind of interesting things. I ran across beef consumption in one of my magazines. They estimate the U.S. beef consumption for 2017 to be at 58 pounds per capita. And that means that we have 323 million people, so we consume about 18.7 million pounds of beef. Now, the consumption in Brazil is 85.8 pounds per capita. Can you imagine that? You know, that's a lot. But they have 207, almost 208 million for a population. And so they consume 17.8 million pounds. So they're definitely growing as a consumer of beef. There's no question, in contrast to where we are, although they expect that we're probably going to stay around 58 again for this next year. And one of my very wise clients told me this. This is called the other golden rule, and we should all really hang on to this. He who has the gold makes the rules.
That is so very true. Hey,
yes.
Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you, Todd. Bye-bye.
That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. Hey, have you purchased your tickets for the all-day agricultural outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana yet? I hope so, but if not, you can do that online right now at willag.org. That's willag.org, or by calling this number, 800-898-1065. The all-day ag outlook began way back in 1991, and we have great years each and every year. This year, there'll be more than a dozen analysts there to talk about the commodity markets. We'll also take up block trades and variable rate storage, some changes that are coming to corn and soybean futures in Chicago. At the CME Group, we'll hear about the agricultural weather forecast and discuss dicamba, too. The all-day ag outlook is at the Beef House the first Tuesday of the month of March. That's the sixth day. We'll open our doors at 8 a.m. Central Time and run through the mid-afternoon. Be sure to get your $30 ticket right now online, willag.org. 800-898-1065. And the ticket includes your morning coffee and roll from the Beef House and your noon hour lunch also from the Beef House. Buy them right now. $30, 800-898-1065 or willag.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Dennis Bowman. He is an extension educator from right here on campus and helps to put together the pest management conferences that we've been attending today. You'll hear more about that in about a week, maybe a bit more, when we get to next Friday. Not this one, but the following one, so be sure to tune in. However, Dennis, I want to talk a little bit about what these conferences are for and the last one that's coming up. So you've got a whole set of conferences that are set up to educate producers and retailers in the state of Illinois.
Right. We have four of these scattered around the state. We started off in Mount Vernon 2 weeks ago. Last week we were in Springfield. We're in Champaign today. And in 2 weeks we'll be up in Malta on February 21st. Registration still open for that. So anybody in Northern Illinois or Central Illinois wants to make the drive up to Kishwaukee Community College, that's where we hold that on their campus up there. We really try to get this opportunity to get our information from some of our folks on campus out to the ag industry in the state, also helping supply the certified crop advisors with their continuing education credits so that they can keep their licenses current and have good information to help their clients with.
Yeah, so CEUs is a big part of this, meaning that these are the continuing education units. However, those folks who are interested sometimes need them, sometimes don't, but it really is a learning lesson for the people that are in the audience.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a good avenue. A lot of folks still really prefer a face-to-face meeting over going online, social media. I mean, those are all big things these days, but there's still a lot of our folks out there that want to that face-to-face experience to see these people in person, have an opportunity to ask questions, interact with them maybe after their presentation. So this is an opportunity for these folks to meet face-to-face.
And really, they're meeting the researchers, sometimes from here on campus, sometimes from other places, that are looking at how to manage crops in the state of Illinois.
For the most part, these are all folks that are doing applied research that directly relates to what the farmers are doing.
And what kinds of things did they hear today?
We just got out of a session with Dr. Aaron Hager talking about some of the issues with dicamba and his perspective as being a person who's worked with herbicides for many years and dealt with these issues. So he offered a lot of good perspectives about how we should go about trying to use this chemical and also some of the issues that he's seen that farmers need to and producers need to be aware of. I also got to meet two of our new specialists on campus, Nick Sider, who's our new extension field crop entomologist, and Nathan Klichewski, our new plant pathologist for corn and soybeans. It's really nice. Those guys just came on board this fall, and this is our chance to get them out in front of producers so they can start getting feedback and also giving some information about themselves and the programs that they're building.
And Tony Studer was here, too.
Tony Studer, a basic researcher who's really interested in talking to farmers about the kind of things he's doing to try to improve the photosynthetic ability of corn and the water use efficiency of corn. Some really interesting stuff that he's got going on, and he does a great job of communicating it, and also his excitement for doing ag research.
So we'll hear from them all, actually, not this Friday, but the following one. So if you listen to the home station, you'll be able to hear them throughout the full hour on that particular Friday. One of the things that happens at these events is that there really is that interaction between producers, retailers, and the researchers. I was interested to see sometimes it can be combative or a little bit, sometimes what happens in the meetings, because there are different feelings about how to manage these crops.
The dicamba issue is probably the one that's foremost there. There's the folks that are have the technology from the companies that are trying to do their best to put the best foot forward and put the best face on the issue. And we've got other folks that are not using the technology that are really concerned about keeping their crop safe.
So one note on this, coming up on the 6th day of March, we'll have on hand with us Aaron Hager to present at the All Day Ag Outlook his take on dicamba. And I think I'm going to change the name of that to Dicamba Unfiltered, just so we get a good look. And if you want to come over, you can always do that. Hey, Dennis, thanks so much. And hopefully I'll see you in Malta again. When is that, and how do people register?
They can go online. If you search for the CSREC, the Crop Science Research and Extension Center, CSREC, you'll first get the Central Scotland Equality Council.
Hey, Dennis, you know how it's easier to do. Just go to willag.org, willag.org, hit calendar, and look under February 21st. You'll find who will be there, and you'll also see the links. Hey, thanks so much, Dennis.
You're welcome. Thank you, Todd.
That's Dennis Bowman. He's with the University of Illinois Extension. Now let's turn our attention early to the weather forecast. We're joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, let's start with the hard red winter wheat growing regions in the United States. They've been dry.
It's been 114 days since it's rained at Amarillo, Texas, and 118 days since they had more than 0.05 of an inch. That area will see measurable precipitation this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. However, measurable is not enough. The moisture is probably going to run a few hundredths of an inch, upwards to 0.2 of an inch, maybe 0.3 in a couple of counties, and that's as good as it gets. Now, there's going to be some follow-up precipitation that comes along next week And it's probably not going to be much better than that. The bottom line is we end the prolonged period without rain, but we do not start to really fix the moisture deficits, and drought will prevail there. Eventually, in late February and early March, we'll go back into a dry and warm bias, and we'll have to wait until sometime in mid to late March for the next round of beneficial moisture.
What are conditions like in Argentina?
Since we last talked, deterioration in crop conditions and field conditions has certainly occurred. We have depleted topsoil moisture. Subsoil moisture is extremely low, running short to very short in most of the production areas with the exception of Cordoba. And the temperatures have been very warm. It hasn't been quite as hot as we were expecting this week, and that's probably the biggest plus, I suppose. But the crops have been seriously stressed and still are and will be for another day or two. We do expect some showers and thunderstorms to develop Thursday night going into Friday and on into the actually early Sunday morning across a fair amount of the country. Almost everybody will get some rain. However, the amounts are going to be varied from location to location, and the amount of relief that will occur will also vary. So we're expecting Cordoba, which has been the best crop-producing state, I think, at least this year. The conditions there have been certainly the most favorable, and they will recover most quickly because the crops haven't been stressed there nearly as long. So they're going to be real good real quick. But neighboring areas in Santa Fe and parts of Buenos Aires and Entre Rios, these provinces will likely continue to experience ongoing stress until the rains arrive. And then the rain is probably going to be a little disappointing. I think there's going to be enough there to moisten up the topsoil and give the crop a little bit of a boost. But we go right back into dry weather Monday through Thursday and maybe even Friday of next week, and the temperatures will warm back up a little bit. So I'm not convinced that the relief is going to be anything more than temporary, and follow-up rain in the second weekend of the two-week outlook between the 16th and the 19th is probably going to be extremely important for at least trying to keep these crops afloat without any further decline.
We've been talking about counterbalancing the losses or potential losses in Argentina with a very good crop in Brazil. Is it still on pace?
Yeah, you know, I think it is. There is definitely an area in Brazil that has become way too wet. This is outside the major production areas from Mato Grosso down to Sao Paulo and Paraná. It's mostly the northeasternmost part of Mato Grosso and then into neighboring areas of Bahia and Minas Gerais and Goiás. And those particular states are extremely wet right now, but they will go through a period of drying as we go over the next 7 days, and that'll improve the situation there. In the meantime, the best harvest and crop maturation conditions have been in the interior south of Brazil in the past week, and those areas are going to start seeing a little more rainfall, so the field pace will probably start to slow a little bit. I do not expect to see any serious issues with quality, but of course the big push right now is to get those soybeans out of the field so that second season crop can get put in, and we will see that advance. It's just going to have a little slower pace to it for a while.
Thanks so much, and we appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated. He's in Kansas City. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.